There we go.
All right. We are recording. Let me Twitter about this. Just so everybody knows, without Dave. There. Mm. Well, we are one man short today. What the heck is going on with this group?
I don't know. And it's not like him to not answer his phone.
No, it's not.
I'm very concerned.
I am mock concerned.
You're more angry than concerned.
No, I just know that the man has a new baby, and there is like 85 to 86 legitimate reasons that he could not be answering his phone.
Psh, that's not why he's not here.
It's no,
he's
not
got
with
an awesome life without
yeah,
us.
Yeah, exactly. That's wasn't his why. Last Twitter that I read? Ran into Amy Acker and did not know who she was. All right, big shot.
Okay, showbiz. Take it easy.
See, that's the real reason why you don't want to miss a Webcomics Weekly. It's not because we then decide as a group that you don't get your share of advertiser or sponsor money. It's because the minute you're off the show, it's your turn in the box. And
we're going to talk about Dave for the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's called callbacks. He's ripe for them.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be back around. Yeah.
We will... We'll come back to this in this show, too. Don't think this is the end of it. This is not just our rock on. This is not our mock Kellett segment. We're going to pepper this throughout the show.
Yeah, this thing's got a lot of applesauce.
Are we opening with our topic, or are we opening with an email?
Let's open with the topic.
Okay. It's good. Oh, by the way, this is Webcomics Weekly.
Oh, yeah. Chris... I don't mean to criticize, but we did not introduce ourselves. Which brings me to tonight's topic, criticism. Webcomics Weekly. Are you really still listening to this if you don't know who we are? I'm Scott Kurtz, PvPonline.com.
I'm Chris Straub, Starslip.com, and two other things.
No, say and the URL.
Oh, yeah. Come on. All right. Fchords.com and Chainsawsuit.com.
And I'm Brad Geiger. I do Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com, Fables at fables.com with a PH, and Courting Disaster at courting-disaster.com.
Oh, my God. I finally tied Brad. Finally tied Brad for a number of strips. I'm on my way.
Does Chainsaw Suit count as a strip?
No.
Oh. And I also do Ding at crispygamer.com.
All right.
Comics,
there we go.
Slash Ding. So I'm officially ahead of Dave, whose second comic should be called Showbiz.
Showbiz. It'll just be random encounters with people that he's too cool not to know who they
are. No. The strip is literally just a website, and it's nothing but an empty comic space on his and then below the blog says, couldn't post a strip today because... And then...
and it's just got a random celebrity generator.
Rubbing elbows with Joss Whedon tonight. Could not post strip.
But got a great story.
Yeah, which I will not tell here.
Which I can't tell you. I'm that jerk. I hate Dave.
Alright, so...
Tonight's topic.
I made a post on my website, which you can probably still find on the main page. And if you are listening to this in the future... You can do a search on why we insulate. This is the topic of the blog post.
The word insulate will probably get you there.
Yeah. Also a blog post about my attic woes. But skip that. And the reason why
that one is called Should I Insulate?
Should I Insulate?
All right. Sorry.
Basically, what happened was... I read a very positive review of our book, How to Make Webcomics, by a woman named Johanna. I assume that's a woman, right? Johanna?
Yeah. What was it?
Over
Comics Worth Reading?
ComicsWorthReading.com. And a very, very positive review. Glowing review. But she made one criticism of the book. And that was that there was nothing in the book that advised young creators to... basically take to heart the advice of critics, that all Dave's chapter on dealing with critics really advised was for new creators to deflect and kind of ignore what critics had to say. and that she felt that that gave the impression that we believe critics are never right, and that she, you know, took exception with that, which you would expect because she is a critic. So I wrote a blog post explaining why we insulate, or why we advise to insulate ourselves from that. And, you know, a very simple reason, because you can find 8 different review blogs with a review of your work, all of them making very strong, compelling arguments, and all of them opposing each other. And, I mean, you just end up with a noise-to-signal ratio that's impossible to navigate, and it would be impossible for a young creator to, you know, make any kind of a decision on the process of their work based on that. So that's why we suggested it. And that blog post made a crap storm of, I wouldn't say drama, but follow-up posts from many, many websites.
It was a heated discussion.
I actually felt it was pretty drama-free.
Yeah, it was just like a difference of opinion, but it was spirited.
It was spirited.
People felt strongly about it.
Spirited's a good word.
Yep.
How would you feel about the statement that it's pretty right down party lines? Like, pretty much 99% of the critics agree with Johanna, and 99% of the artists agree with me.
If we had had more time to prepare, I would have thought it would have been a good idea to find somebody who did disagree with us, who was a cartoonist. Because I mean, as far as I know, it is pretty much down the line.
I found one or two people that one person that disagreed, but there was a caveat to his disagreement. So, and that was because I think it made the point that an artist at some point has to make some kind of accountability to input, and that, you know, if you exclude all criticism, then how do you get any kind of input on your work? But, you know, the one of the issues I brought up about Johanna's review is that she, you know, she claims we don't give any advice on criticism, but we spent 4 chapters in the book doing constructive criticism on each other's work. So I think we illustrated it pretty well. But the point I wanted to bring up tonight was this, you know, how much of, you know, the creative process should be, you know, based on some kind of listening to any kind of critical review.
Well, I've got a real simple rule when it comes to accepting criticism. I will accept criticism from any source once I determine that that person is at least as good as I am or better at what I'm doing. Otherwise, forget about it. You got a 50-50 shot. I'll certainly listen, but I can't take it seriously. And the truth of the matter is, a good idea can come from anywhere, so it's good to keep an open mind. But unless you've proven that you're as good at comics as I am or better, and that's not a necessarily small field, but unless you can prove that you're that type of person, I can't take you that seriously. I can only maintain an open mind and then move on.
Yeah, that actually exactly echoes my feeling, is that everybody does have something to say, and we would do well to at least keep an ear open to some of it. But I'm really going to sit up and pay attention to somebody that I know and respect, who I would like to be as good as, you know.
Well, and that's because you're looking to improve your work. One of the things that really, really bugged me about some people's interpretations of what I wrote was that I felt that I was not, as an artist, was not open to improvement. That my work's perfect as it is, and I don't need anyone to tell me to fix it. Because, man, that is the opposite of what we've been preaching for the last year and in the book, is that, you know, we're all a bunch of insecure, you know, almost to the point of unhealthy, you know, psychopaths.
Yeah.
When it comes to not being, you know, comfortable with our work. Or happy with it. I mean, it's a constant struggle to feel good about what we're doing. And, I mean, one of the things I said to Angie this weekend when I did a book signing, and she said, "Do you want to bring any door cages?" And I said, I'm getting to the point where I don't want to bring that book anymore. And she said, why is it not selling well? And I go, no, it sells great, but it's to the point now where all the art in that book I just can't stand looking at, and I don't want to sell it. Like, I don't want it out there as an example of my work. I wish we could just sell the later books and not sell that old stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And I, you know, that's just a part of your personal growth. But none of that had to do with me reading some critical review blog.
And that's just it. I mean, now that we're in the age of the internet, anyone can set up a blog and start hammering away at someone's work, and kind of have this air of authority based on how well he or she writes. And we're kind of expected to go along with it. And mind you, for the most part, I don't have any problem with what this particular critic wrote, you know. But,
no.
But you know, in fact, she brings up an excellent point about press releases, which should probably be included in a later edition, because that is something that people need a little work on, you can tell. But to take the next step and to say that an artist needs critics to grow as an artist, I don't go for. Artists need other artists. To
yes.
help grow. A critic, somebody who doesn't have that necessary, and by the way, I don't know anything, I don't want to, we're talking about this one person's blog, I'm talking about critics in general.
I'm not, I mean, this is what brought it up, but I'm talking about, listen, this is not our first time to this rodeo.
Yeah, but in terms of critics in general, I'm expected to believe that they know all sorts of things about cartooning. Let me put it to you this way. There's a reason that Eric Burns, when he did Web Snark, was such a well-respected voice in the community, because he has shown in a couple of outings that he's also a very, very good cartoonist. So when he says something, we're likely to listen, you know?
Yeah.
I always respected Eric's viewpoints when it came to criticism. But
he was a great writer, that's true.
But somebody, exactly. And somebody else, maybe not so much.
Well, and this is my question, and the reason why I bring it up is, you know, Chris and I saw this, I don't know, was it a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? When was Webcomics Review big? It's still almost two years ago now, right?
Webcomics Examiner? It's been like 2 years or two and a half years.
2.5 years. But this is Chris and I's second kind of go around to see this opinion flare up, where, you know, in every other aspect of my life, I appreciate and read the works of critics. I do it everywhere. I mean, movie reviews, restaurant reviews. I recently bought a new vehicle, and we looked up, you know, consumer reports and all kinds of stuff, and safety stuff and mileage. I mean, that's all using the work of critics. And but it seems to me that there's this weird thing online, especially when it comes to the criticizing comics or any other kind of art. I guess I just don't see it a lot in music and stuff. But it seems to me that there's, every once in a while, there's this surgence of bloggers who stop creating critiques for the consumer of a product and start creating critiques for the creator of a product.
Mm.
And, you know, you can tell their writing switches from, you know, this is why you should or should not buy this comic, or this is why you should or should not read this comic. And it's spoken more to, this is what you should or shouldn't do with your creative endeavor. And it's speaking to the artist. And that is where I take exception. Because, you know, and that's what I took exception with in Joanna's review. You know, she could have said she hated the book, and I'd been fine with that. But what she took exception with was that we as creators were not listening to what she had to say and taking it to heart as a part of our creative process. And so that's where I think it gets dangerous, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really hard to, to keep bringing up Joanna, because I understand that she's well-respected, and, like, most of my criticism has nothing to do with her. In fact, I have almost zero criticism as far as what she said. She said a lot of great things and had good points.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the review, especially when you get at the level like Scott, I've managed to dodge most of it for my work, but you encounter a lot of people, it's just noise. Like, there's absolutely no value in it. And I used to be, and this is now really going to be a sad admission, I used to do a lot of moderating of various forums and that kind of thing. And the kind of moderator I was at the time was, everybody's got a voice, everybody's got an opinion, and it's important. And, you know, you need to listen to them, and you need to be understanding of when what they say seems hurtful, because maybe they don't mean it that way. But as I've grown and become more jaded, I've come to realize that there are people who just want to stir the pot, and there isn't value in listening to those guys, unfortunately.
And I think that's why if you do decide you're going to traverse these waters and you're going to try to separate the signal from the noise and find the gold out of this straw, you know, pile of straw that's going to help you, I think you're going to waste a ton of time and energy, and you're going to get beaten down pretty heavily.
You would do better to solicit opinions from cartoonists that you respect and write them an email and say, hey, this is my work, and maybe you wouldn't mind giving it a once-over and telling me what you think.
Well, I thought we spent another podcast talking about them doing exactly not that.
Well, the problem, the thing is that you need to, at that point, you need to expect that maybe people are not going to respond.
But what I'm saying is, like, everybody builds a support group around them, you know? I mean, at every level of my career, even when I was in college and when I was doing stuff on my own, you build a level of people around you that whose opinion you respect. You know, you eventually stop showing your mom and your teachers.
Right.
Because you realize they're just kind of patting you on the head. You know, and then you start asking people who you know will challenge you, you know, and won't just be nice or won't just be impressed because they don't know any other artists. I don't think it's hard for people to build those critique support groups, is it? Or was it just easy for me?
That's a hard one for me to answer, because I really have never had anybody really, other than my wife, who obviously is a big fan of XKCD. I've never really had anybody that I did that with. You know, I just kind of plugged away. I knew when I was hitting bad notes, and I knew when I was missing the mark, and I just kept plugging away. I got my critiques and my response from other cartoonists that I admired. But I never had that kind of like a buddy that I would show work to. There was nobody who ever came up to the level that I was ready to accept them.
But like,
I think actually that's a really good point, Brad, the idea that not that that's all of what you said, but the idea that you need to be self-critical and you need to learn it.
Right.
Because there's a lot of danger in looking at whatever work you've done and go, it's perfect, it's great, I don't need to change a thing. Everybody can improve, but the primary person to be able to identify that is yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, I was always very proud of what I had done, but I knew that there was more that it could be done to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess I just never had that buddy that I felt comfortable enough around that I showed him my work and really took to heart what he said. You know?
Yeah, I never had any friends either, Brad. It's okay. I'm a lonely guy.
there were always people like that who maybe wanted to be that in my life. And would kind of give it would make comments and commentary. But
well, listen, guys. I mean, we're thinking about when we were kids doing this. But let's apply it to what kids have now.
Okay.
All right. What would you rather a young cartoonist do with his web comic that's on the web? Go around reading reviews of his book or his comic from different review blogs and trying to take that to heart, or going to somewhere like drawn.ca or the Pencil Jack forums and going into a forum specific to cartooning and saying, here's my work, what do you guys think, and eliciting critical review and critique from other artists. I mean, there's there's DeviantArt communities, there's all these forums where people...
There's a great community right on halfpixel.com.
Exactly.
In the discussion forum with Webcomics Biopsy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a very good source of getting reviewed by your peers,
mm-hmm.
you know, from other people who are coming from it at the same skill level that you might be in, and different people that are experiencing the same problems. So, you know, there's lots of places you can go for that.
So, guys, can we, there seems to be a common thread here. Can we say that there's a lot of danger, or at least a lot of, what am I trying to say here? Inconsistency or difficulty in listening to the unsolicited critique or opinion?
Hmm.
Because we are going to, the advice we're giving is ask somebody that you like, go to a forum where they're already discussing it, stuff like that. And the real problem that we have is when these other review blogs, they come to you and say, hey, this is how you need to be taking care of business. That's the kind of thing that it doesn't necessarily do you good to listen to.
Well, you know what? It might be a psychological thing there, too, because nobody likes to get a critique. I can't imagine anybody looking forward to that kind of experience.
No.
But when you are opening yourself up for it, it's almost like you're in the driver's seat. I'm bringing this upon myself. I'm mentally ready for it. Bring it on. As opposed to waking up one morning and finding out that this thing is there, and it's all of a sudden thrust upon you, and you're not mentally ready for it. And maybe that's part of why that's a little bit harder to take.
Yeah. Well,
no,
I mean,
that makes sense.
That's a good point. I mean, the thing is, like, this is one of the things I got really upset about, is a lot of the responses to my blog was to paint me as some kind of crybaby. It was like, oh, Big Bad Scott just can't take any criticism of his work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, that's not the case at all. I mean, I don't appreciate stupid criticism. You know, I get that a lot from a very trusted source, and that's my little brother. My little brother is very much a quality over quantity guy. And I keep trying to explain to him that if you're putting out a daily comic strip or even a 5-day or 3-day a week comic strip, there's only so much time you could spend per strip. At some time, you have to say, that's good enough, and move on. And he
right.
just does not get that. But I don't have the time and energy to waste on convincing him that that's the way it's got to be. So you have to move on. And, you know, I guess the two points that I just really want to make to anyone listening that is, you know, thinking about making their own stuff, you know, it's really cool to see all the critics going, eh, Scott's being a baby, and all the artists going, no, Scott's right, I feel the same way. But, you know, you have to decide for yourself. But the two points I want to make is that you always have to make your strip for yourself. You always have to write for yourself. Someone sent me a Mobius quote. Yeah. And this is translated and paraphrased from the French, but he said, Moby said, the artist works for themselves, not the public, not for family, not for a job. And then he said, the artist must be a warrior, he must fight. And, you know, to me, that really speaks not just to fight against convention or fight against what other people might say, but you're kind of fighting against yourself a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, listen, the internal dissatisfaction with your work has to be there. Saying that you get to ignore the critics is not a free ride. You know, that has to be there. But did you guys ever see the other point I wanted to make is that I really feel like unless you're a trusted source and you're being solicited for by a creator to give them feedback, I think it's bad form to do a critical review of anybody's work aimed at the creator, you know, as if you're a part of the... I think it's just too pretentious to assume you're part of the creative process. And I want to quote Ratatouille. You guys ever see that movie, that Pixar movie?
Oh, yeah.
Repeatedly.
Anton Ego, at the end of it, when he comes around, says, in many ways, the work of a critic is easy. We risk very little, yet enjoy a position over those who offer up their work and themselves to our judgment. We thrive on negative criticism, which is fun to write and to read. But the bitter truth we critics must face is that in the grand scheme of things, the average piece of junk is more meaningful than our criticism designating it so. But there are times when a critic truly risks something, and that is in the discovery and defense of the new. The world is often unkind to new talent, new creations, and new needs friends. And I thought that was, something.
Cool.
Yeah, that was something. And then he says, later he says, I have made no secret of my disdain for Chef Gusteau's famous motto, anyone can cook. But I realize only now do I truly understand what he meant. Not everyone can become a great artist, but that a great artist can come from anywhere. Which I thought was kind of was pretty good writing. I really liked that.
Yeah.
But, if I just think it's really easy right now to put up a blog and kind of try to take your review and elevate that review out of its very noble purpose of either defending the new or protecting a consumer or advising a consumer and taking it to be its own creation, equal to that of what you are critiquing. I think that's what I take exception to. And that... a lot of bloggers would do well to try to emulate more of what's his name, Eric Burns, than say, I don't want to throw a name out and then.
Well, let's say.
I kind of like where you had gone earlier, and that is, for example, on my site, I'll talk about a comic book that I've read and offer my thoughts about what happened in the comic. Not necessarily as a critique, more as a review. I'm a big fan of this artist. I'm not so much of that artist. I really enjoyed this story. I didn't enjoy that story so much. I think that's perfectly fair to offer you to kind of share your opinions with a work of art.
Valid.
But I think that you really make a really good point when you say that. I think anyone who acts in that role as a critic or as a maker of opinions, that you cross a line when you go from here's what I thought to here's what you should think.
Here's
what, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to share your opinion and to say, you know what, these guys that are drawing this particular comic, not such a great team. They're not working out well for me.
Well, and listen, not to pick on Joanna again, but
no,
that is the point I was trying to make, okay? And that's where she crossed the line. There's nothing wrong with her saying, this is my opinion. Even for her to say, I wish that they had spoken more about dealing with criticism beyond deflecting it. Her point was that we took no consideration for the fact that the critic might be right. And the truth of the matter is, the critic cannot be right or wrong. All they can do is state their opinion. And, that's the issue, is that she wants us to consider the fact that she might know better when it comes to what we do.
I think
a good opinion can, or a good the truth or a good point can come from anywhere, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to come from anywhere.
Exactly. Well, listen, it's an interesting discussion. I mean, I'm glad we had it. I mean, even looking at both sides of the discussion, I think has helped me. But in the end, you only have so much time and energy to spend on that stuff. And I still maintain that the best advice is to do as much as you can to insulate yourself from that kind of input, because the minute you open yourself up to just one piece, it all comes flooding in, and then you just end up spinning like a dervish and you'll lose your bearings.
Part of
Hello?
I'm discussing.
Did we lose you there, Chris?
Hello?
We lost you for a second. Start over.
Okay. I was saying part of what... maybe I hit mute. Part of what we've avoided talking about, but it's important, is that a lot of this kind of more amateur criticism type blog, it is very much about the drama, and that is where you can lose yourself. You know, there's no end to that, because there's no, and again, I used to think that there was an endpoint. I used to think, all right, well, if I can make this point, if I can make him see this part, like I'll concede this, and then he'll concede that part,
right?
Right, and then I think that it's going to end, but there's no end, because some people just like to argue and some people just like to fight, and it is an enormous time sink. I used to waste an inordinate amount of time doing that.
Right. And that's an important point. It's a tremendous time sink. You're wasting time. You're never going to convince someone. And since Dave's not here, I'm going to make his point for him, and that is to remember that...
And that is that he's met Francis Ford Coppola?
That's right. no, but Dave has said this a couple times, and it's such a really good point, and it's so very his personality. But you have to remember that sometimes you might just be dealing with somebody who has a very, very sad, angry life, and they're not necessarily striking out at you. They're just striking out at a target to make them feel better about themselves, and you can't defeat someone like that.
I'm gonna distance myself from the, well, you know, you might be encountering someone who's got a sad little life defense, because I have, if you go based on what I've posted online and what I've taken the time to respond to and the amount of time I've spent not just defending myself or reading stuff, but trying to convince other people of my point, I have a very small little life. Very small, very petty, and very unfulfilling
life. But you learned your
life.
Lessons, God. That's what the point, right? I mean, you learned.
Chris, I believe that you have just made a grave judgment error on your part. I have not learned my lesson.
No.
Do you think that for the rest of my life I will never get sucked into the quagmire of trying to convince another of my opinion? Come on.
Of course it's fun. I like it. I like it.
Let's get into it now. Come on, Chris. Pick a topic.
Anyway.
Well,
Subway versus Quiznos. Which is better? Come on. I'll take Quiznos. You take Subway.
Well, Quiznos is more oily, I think. But Subway, I don't like the topping. So...
Well, we pretty much stomped this one to death, because we've got a very thick and overflowing mailbag.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I think that was a good discussion about criticism.
So if you'd like to critique our critique on critiquing, please send your email to ww@halfpixel.com with your opinion on this critique.
Which
of
we will
critics.
Dear Webcomics Weekly, I've been doing a strip for a few months now, and the lion's share of my work has been standalone gags. Now that I've established my characters a little bit more, I was considering lining up a couple of storylines with some real continuity. My question is, when you're writing a storyline, does the storyline dictate the jokes, or do you write a storyline around the joke you want to tell? Because the previous story I did was the latter. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Rob Lundy, consolehopping.com.
Oh my God. First of all, Rob Lundy. All right, we lost Chris. Hold on a second. Computer problemos. Chris?
No, I'm back in.
Okay.
Yeah, there he is.
You there, Brad?
I'm here.
I've been following along.
Chris, are you there?
I'm here. I'm here, Scott. I'm
Brad,
here.
Brad, are you there?
I'm still here.
God, I've just missed. No, you're there. Okay.
So, Chris.
Guys, you wouldn't believe who I just met in that 30 seconds that I was gone.
Who? Tell me.
This is incredible.
Chris, Brad just read one of 1,000 emails sent to us by Rob Lundy this last week.
No, I'm reading it. I've been following along. So I'm
And I think it was a very good question.
It is a good question, but Rob, you would get more cartooning done if you emailed us less. I'm just going to say that. I'm going to throw that out. I'm going to take the hit on that one. You are prolific with your email writing. We wrote a book. You should read it. It could answer a lot of your questions. Okay. I know Rob Lundy more from his emails than from his comic. Oh, the guy at the email client. Yes, I've seen that.
Oh,
I love his work. I love his work in Firefox, or on Firefox. Jeez, God, joke failed.
Oh,
I love his work in Microsoft Outlook. Is what I was gonna say.
Can I make a quick plug right here?
Mm-hmm.
Rob Lundy and his strip console hopping. It's Tuesday Thursday, just like the one I do. F chords. I made it Tuesday Thursday. I'm having pacing problems with my continuity, doing it just twice a week, so I am bumping it up to Monday, Wednesday, Friday, starting tomorrow, or starting whatever year this
is. Oh, really?
Yeah. Now.
Now, just that, which leads us to Rob Lundy's question.
Which leads us to the question.
In my process, the concept of the storyline comes first, and then I build the jokes into the storyline, most of the time. But I will say that I tend to, I don't know about you guys, I'm really curious to hear what you guys say about this, but I tend to picture, not an entire storyline, but I tend to picture a good scene in my head, and then I build almost a storyline around that scene. And it's not necessarily a joke, but it's like a moment that I feel is compelling, and then I build around that to get to it. I've done that. How about you guys?
What I generally do is I know along the way, I've got a general arc in mind. I know where I want my characters to be at the end of that arc. And I know I can kind of split it up into many steps, you know, from point A to point B, from point B to point C. And I can almost further divide that down and say that maybe there's three steps between points A and B. And each of those steps has to be a good gag. And each one of those gags have to kind of leave you set up for the next shot, almost like you're playing billiards. So for me, definitely the storyline has to come first, and then the gags are the steps along the way. I kind of have a far-reaching knowledge of where my characters are going to be in the far future. But beyond that, that's kind of hazy. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Every now and again, you're going to come up with a really good joke and a really good gag that you cannot lay off. And you know that once you play that down, once you play that card, it's going to completely alter the the arc. And you're going to have to keep that in mind for the rest of the time that you're writing. But you can't. But it happens to me all the time, and I always use that Yogi Berra quote: "When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Don't shy away from that. Sometimes that leads you to some really good places, and sometimes it leads you to a real writer's challenge where you have to write yourself out of a tree. But you're gonna find that you're gonna end up using that gag. It's a brilliant gag, but it's gonna throw your whole arc off."
Why am I not surprised that you are a big fan of Yogi Berra quotes?
That's all you got from that?
No, that's not all I got from it. But listen, I don't know if you're aware of this, but my job on this podcast is to spice it up with the jokes. And so
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's kind of my shtick here on the Webcomics Weekly show.
Probably because my comic is so popular that nobody goes there anymore.
That'll happen.
God, wow. That took me a second because I am not as mentally well-versed with Yogi Berra quotes as some of us on this podcast. Good God, Brad. Come on, Brad, give us another one. I know you've got another one. I know you've got one more.
He's rifling through the index cards right now as we speak. You know.
He's got at least one more.
I'm freezing up. You're going to have to give me a second.
Was that the big Yogi Berra? It's so popular nobody goes there anymore. Is that the big one? I thought there was another really super famous
one. No, there is a couple of really big ones.
Oh, God.
I'll see it when I believe it.
No, there was another one. God, there was another really famous Yogi Berra quote that I can't think of right now, and
Hey, Boo Boo, bring me that.
Yeah, it was something about picking a baskets. I know that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Yogi Berra bit. All right.
All right.
I think it's a mix about it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah.
That's Yogi Berra? It ain't over till it's over?
Yeah, it is.
Or how about, I've pulled up a page now. This is like deja vu all over again.
No.
You can observe a lot just by watching.
Maybe I like Yogi Berra because all those quotes are making sense to me.
I knew I was going to take the wrong train, so I left early.
I thought it was Rocky Balboa that said, "It ain't over till it's over."
Well, he was paraphrasing.
He was quoting Yogi, apparently.
Yeah.
Back to Rob Lundy.
Back to Rob Lundy and one of his 6,000 emails. I think we're all agreeing that the plot line comes first.
Yeah, definitely plot line, definitely.
Well, it depends. I read his strip, and I don't think he's trying to add like pathos. So
what?
Maybe, you know what I'm saying? Like his strip is very, like gag a day, like he said, and it's very whimsical. I don't know that he would do so poorly from careening from one joke to the next.
But I don't understand how you can create, like, all right, I got a great joke about Santa Claus, I've got a joke about manatees, I've got one about buying a new car, and I've got one humdinger about hero sandwiches.
I've got them all on index cards
in front of me. Let me arrange these index cards into a storyline. How would that work?
You're writing Family Guy, Scott.
You've got to go storyline first and write the gags in between.
Oh, yeah, like the storyline is Lois feels fat, but then it's like, this is like the time.
This is just like the time I opened a fish restaurant.
A fish restaurant.
This is the time I was in the Harlem Globetrotters. I think the storyline does have to come first. And frankly, what do you have to lose from following that advice? You know, if you can, no, I'm serious. So I don't even know why that's funny. Why is that funny? Is it just I'm trying to put this to bed? Like I am done with this conversation.
It was just funny how what you were like, was? I honestly, you were so heartfelt. Like you're like, look, no, I really feel it's this way. And also, what's the worst that's gonna happen if I'm wrong?
No, but like, okay, what if we had said no, the jokes come first? Then everybody's gonna write just this random nonsense.
I changed the ending of a recent storyline that I had already plotted out for the future based on one joke that popped into my head.
There you go.
Yeah, and I decided, you know what? That leads me to a great idea. And then I rechanged the whole arc. But then I'm starting over. Then I'm like, oh, that makes me think that might be a better way to do the arc. And then I started over. Here's my arc. Now build jokes into it.
Mm-hmm. But when I'm here, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but when I'm writing Star Slip, and it might be just the subject matter, is since it's sci-fi and it's kind of abstracted from what we talk about day to day, it's way easier for me to write a joke when I'm in a storyline rather than like, hey, Vanderbeam, what are you doing? Oh, I just was reading this, you know?
Yeah.
That's very difficult for me to do. But when I have a storyline, then I can, it's like I've got something to build from.
Well, yeah, I can't see how people do standalone like gag-a-day comics. I gotta figure that's the hardest part of cartooning. I can write in a storyline pretty good and it can lead you to some pretty great places, but writing a gag-a-day where every day you could be either writing about pilgrims or the next day you're writing about astronauts and you've got the entire blank canvas, that's hard for me to get my head around.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just like writing a good joke or a good punchline, you know? I mean, all a storyline really is a one strip that is more complex of an idea and requires multiple days to get the idea across. So when you're writing, you know, when you're writing a story arc, you're not, you know, a story arc is bigger than the sum of its parts. You know, you have a concept or an idea that you want to get across, and you have to be a good storyteller. So you want to use all the tools in your arsenal to deliver that punch, you know, that punchline. And that's the punchline of the arc and not the punchline of an individual gag. So where you might have different tools, like in a regular gag strip where you've got the setup, you've got the, you know, the punchline, you've got all these different elements that make up a good gag, a story arc is just a widening of that process. Now you're using individual strips to set up your larger premise, your larger gag.
Yeah.
You know. But you have the same gag every day, though. You don't always have
well,
to have
not
a gag
always,
every
day. But like most days, you should.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're here to entertain, obviously.
Yeah. I knew I was right. Yeah.
I say that as if there's someone out there going, "Oh, crap! I'm here to entertain every day. What the? That's where I've been going wrong." Someone's feverishly writing down, "Here to entertain every day." Oh, thank God! That critic told me that I was here to appease them.
Callback.
Didn't know I was supposed to entertain. Should have been paying attention to Webcomics Weekly, less attention to that girl I don't know who turned out to be Amy Acker. Callback to Dave.
Mega callback.
Callback to Dave. And then, hey, welcome to Webcomics Weekly. Callback to the intro and good night.
Hey, back all the way out. I was just looking through the mailbag, and this one actually, Chris, is very well suited to what you kind of been talking about today, too, and with F chords and everything.
Okay.
And
Brad, admit it. There is no mailbag.
No. It's not an actual bag of mail.
Okay. I just want that clear.
I got a stack of papers here in front of me.
Okay.
It's a mail stack.
That doesn't even sound right, mail stack.
Okay.
You've got the mailbag. Then what am I holding here?
It's
your laundry.
It's not like Mr. McFeely came in and a big bag full of mail at my doorstep as I was changing.
Oh, Mr. McFeely. Wow.
Awesome. Speedy delivery
right
to you.
Do you know that Mrs. McFeely's the one that knitted his sweater?
Yeah.
There was an actual Mrs. McFeely?
Yeah, and did you know that McFeely was Fred Rogers' middle name?
No, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wait, his middle name was Mr. McFeely?
Well, his middle name was McFeely. I don't think there was a Mr., but that's pretty weird, though.
Is there any aspect of Mr. Rogers that does not implicate that he was
don't say it.
Oh my
a pedophile?
God.
McFeely?
God damn it, Scott. I've been watching... Look, I don't know why this came up with serendipity, I guess, but I was watching Mr. Rogers' stuff on YouTube, and you wouldn't believe.
It is like, the creepiest?
No, you bastard. It's amazing.
What?
In the comments, well, the thing I was saying is that in the comments, everybody's like, "Oh, Mr. Rogers, you know, you're awesome. I love you. You're the best. Like, you really helped my childhood," and I'm in that camp. And then somebody will come in and be like, "Ah, that guy sounds like a pedophile." And then there's just a backlash of everybody going, "You shut up. Mr. Rogers is the best human being on earth." And it's amazing. Mr. Rogers, I actually feel like it's funny to parody anything, but I do not laugh at parodies of Mr. Rogers. I do not enjoy them.
Here's the funny thing is, and let me be really, maybe really clear about this, all right? And I'm saying this as a critique of the product itself. I'm not speaking to the dead Fred Rogers in the hopes that he will change his show that doesn't exist anymore because he died. But
he's not dead, Scott. He's not dead. Shut up.
Listen, I want to talk to you about this because when I was a kid. Now, I'm not talking about now looking back on it, because you know what? You can look at a lot of stuff from more innocent times and be like, and put it in the context of today, where you actually have to be afraid that every dude down the street is some monster looking to destroy your child. But back then, that show really creeped me out. It really, like, made me feel ooky.
No.
Maybe it's because I came from a family where people talked like this, you know. This is how they expressed love. Get out of my room! But, you know, he really, everything, and the puppets really creeped me out.
The Muppets to me
and the Sesame Street guys seem like fuzzy buddies. Like, oh, those are cool monsters. I wish were my best friends, you know, and I want them in my house and hanging out with me. There was only one Muppet that really terrified me, and we can talk about that if you want, but those there was something about
don't want.
There was something about, well, it was Guy Smiley. Do you guys remember Guy Smiley?
That guy was funny. That guy was a good guy.
Listen, want to explain something to you. Most Muppets have a jaw that drops. Okay? They have a big, giant, bulbous head and a bottom jaw that drops down with the thumb that drops down, right? Because you put the hand in the head. Guy Smiley had a giant Good and Plenty head, and when he talked, his jaw stayed fixed, and the whole top of his head flipped back like on a hinge violently.
No.
And it was terrifying.
Oh, Scott, I can't take anything you say seriously now. Yeah. You can't be scared of Guy Smiley.
I had a dream when I was a kid. I had a nightmare. We had a kitchen. We lived in Paris, Texas, and we had a kitchen that had a island in it. No. And I had a dream as a kid that Guy Smiley came around the corner and said, "I'm going to kill you, Scott." And I said, "No, Guy Smiley, I won't. My mom's here in the kitchen, and she won't let you kill me." And he said, "She can't see me because I'm not real. I'm on TV." And I went, "I cannot argue with that logic." And he chased me around the island, throwing his head back with his arms out in front of him.
Oh, my God.
God damn it. Anyway, Rob Lundy, I hope that answers your question. Good to hear from you. And,
Well, I will tell you this, Chris. Knowing that you feel that way about Mr. Rogers, you have to come out sometime to this coast where I was just 2 weekends ago in Pittsburgh. They have a whole it's part of the Children's Museum. They have a whole section devoted to Mr. Rogers because he taped out of Pittsburgh. And they've got his shoes there and his sweater. And those puppets, you're right, Scott, those puppets were really kind of crudely made and very hard-edged, like Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Oh, she was a nightmarish little thing.
Yeah, thank you. They were all nightmarish. And that, like, that kitty and cat would be like, meow, meow, scary.
Henrietta, I was hot. I had a crush on her when I was, like, 8.
And it was all Fred doing all the voices, and you're like, you know, like you always hear a story about how a first Christmas, some dad is like, "Well, I dressed up as Santa Claus, and I decided I would come downstairs." And inevitably, the kid who's like, you know, 1 and a half always goes, "Why are you dressed like Santa, Daddy?" Like, the kid always knows that it's right. The dad. But man, every single voice, I'm like, that's Mr. Rogers doing that voice. That's kind of creepy. I don't like that.
I love you, Mr. Rogers.
Well, I will say this.
Oh, I love you, Mr. Rogers. Stop it, Chris.
They had the little, like, the place where he would sit down and do the trolley. And I went up to that place and sat down and pushed a little button, and the trolley came around. And I swear to God, I got a little choked up.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, at that exhibit, do they have showers that afterwards I can go strip down and get in a fetal position in the back of it and just let water cascade over my body
and try to cleanse me from the creepy experience? You are lucky that they do not have a Guy Smiley exhibit at that thing.
Because you would put that puppet on and chase me?
That's right. Remind me to go buy one. For Baltimore, I'm sitting next to you on the plane, so look forward to that.
Oh, did Angie email you about that, by the way?
Yeah, she did.
Okay, good. Are you sitting next to me?
Yep.
I tell you what, man, if you do any freaking Guy Smiley stuff when we're airborne,
oh God,
that will end our friendship, my friend. Well, I'm just warning you now.
You son of a... All right.
You're going to turn to me and just start throwing your head back.
How did we get off on this rat hole? The mailbag. And here's from the mailbag.
It's this guy's fault.
When you create new side projects, like your new side project, Chris, do you actively try to attract a different audience than the one you already have, or do you try to create more content for your existing fan base? Signed, Rob Lundy. No, I'm kidding. Chris.
Not surprised.
And Chris Moorin. And I know Chris does a webcomic, but he didn't list it here. But I know that name.
P.S. Also, what brand of mayonnaise do you use? Rob Lundy.
Yeah. So Chris, that email's like, "My friend Rob Lundy asked me to email you this. I don't really know what it means. I'm not into comics."
He's getting clever. No. I'm looking to, from the get-go, of course, I'm going to augment whatever audience, say, F Chords has with my existing audience. Whether or not my existing audience is going to go for it is another question. But I am, it's only smart to go for an entirely separate audience and grow it, you know? Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too, is that it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to try to delve back into that same well. You'd want to kind of go out and find something else, and the best possible case, find a different entire
100%
community.
100% different, yeah.
And maybe engender a little cross-pollination in the process.
Well, that's, yeah. Listen, I'm not joking. I know I just did a whole bit on Guy Smiley, but I'm really surprised you guys said that.
Really?
Well, it's just because it seems to me like maybe that's a problem, is that I don't do that. But I tend to hope that I can parlay some of my existing audience to my new strip, new project. I know that with, you know, Truth, Justice, and the American Way, I really hope that PvP readers would be interested. And, you know, now with Ding. But, man, maybe I should really be considering something completely different.
No, but Scott, I don't think we disagree at all. What we're saying is, just like you did with Truth, Justice, and American Way, it was completely different from PvP. But then at the same time, you did everything you could to engender a little bit of cross-pollination there.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're saying.
But what I'm saying is, Truth, Justice, and American
Way. But when you started a secondary project, you didn't do something that was inside the PvP universe or something that was the same
thing. No, Brad, but I also didn't do... It's not like I went from doing a comic strip that was humor-based to a dark novella about a serial killer, you know? I mean, I didn't... Truth, Justice, the American...
I thought that's what Justin was.
It really is. It really is. Serial rapist is Justin. Listen, Justin is more of the same kind of thing from me. You know, it's like fun, wacky humor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With cartoony art.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Ding very much is the same kind of thing. It's a comic strip. It's cartoony. It's making fun of pop culture and video games. But, like... My fear is let's say I really feel like I have in me, you know, a really great murder mystery that's serious. Do you think I could pull that off without going under a pen name? Because aren't people going to be like, oh, Scott Kurtz wrote a novel? Let's go look at it. What is the mystery? Where's the jokes?
Right.
Maybe.
Where's my fart humor?
That's just it, though. I mean, I don't think that you can fault yourself for not being a mystery writer. What you do well is humor, and it would be awkward to try to read some kind of like dark noir mystery from you.
Well, it's really interesting because my brother and I are working on a new book, a new comic together idea, and no, this is not a joke, and it is not. It's a comic book, but it's more, you know, kind of violent, gritty in a way.
Really? Very,
yeah. It's more like, more kind of like Conan, you know, bodies everywhere, you know, lots of big battles kind of thing. And that's Conan the Barbarian, not Conan the late night comedy variety show.
Like, wow, I haven't watched him since Andy left.
Yeah. And I'm really curious how people will respond to something that's so, you know, different from, you know, from what I do. But I'm also kind of excited about it too.
Yeah, I know I'm going to be looking for the punchline in the first couple of pages, and it's going to be like that kind of like waiting for something that never happens.
This barbarian has not cracked one penis joke.
Wow.
Oh, Brad.
What?
You just bailed on me. I made a joke involving swimsuit parts, and your response was, "Wow." That hit me to the core.
Well, see, I was in serious Scott mode. I wasn't in jokey Scott mode. I'm gonna have a problem with this whole thing. I can tell.
Ouch.
What? Is he being serious now, or is he being jokey?
I'm being jokey. There's only one me. I'm always the jokey me. You'll never hear anything serious.
Oh, I know that's not the case. I've talked to you when you're not the jokey you.
Scott, you need to do a comic strip that's about like you've thought of a great idea for a murder mystery, but it involves farts. So now it's even harder for people to separate.
Hey, did you hear Scott Kurtz wrote a murder novel? Really? I mean, is it comedy? No. It's like a straight murder novel. Oh, wow, really? Huh, I wonder what that's like. What's it called? The Farting Detective.
And on the cover, he's slipping on a banana peel. Because that's how he breaks his back, and he has to solve the crime from the hospital, and it's really tough.
Goodness gracious, where were we?
Good story. Anyway, what was the question?
Open that mailbag again.
In doing a secondary comic, do you keep it close to the theme of your first one, or are you trying to branch out and get a whole new audience?
I think
the latter is probably smart.
Get your own audience, because if I'm doing two versions of Starslip or two strips that only appeal to that same audience, then I only have that audience, you know?
Right.
And from a monetizing standpoint, you know,
they've
already spent their money on the one.
Here's a difficult question for you. You guys know with PvP, my policy is no really bad curse words. You know, there's innuendo, there's the something, you know, curse words up to what you might hear on, you know, primetime or something, primetime TV. But I'm not dropping F-bombs or anything like that, and I'm trying to keep it as clean as possible. It's pretty PG-13, wouldn't you guys say?
Absolutely.
All right, yeah. But now, that being said, you guys have met me in real life. You spent more than 5 minutes with me. I am not a PG-13 kind of guy.
No.
Right.
In my talk. And I've, especially the Penny Arcade guys, Chris, you know this, they encourage me. They believe that when I am not PG-13, that I am effing hilarious. And that I am really doing myself a disservice by not having an alternate strip where I just have cut loose. But I don't know how to do that. How could I possibly do that and have that not reflect poorly on PvP?
It's really, I think it's a hard balance.
Whoa, Chris, you there?
The name again?
Chris?
But I think you could...
Chris.
Yeah,
Chris.
I'm still here. What is it?
You went out for a second.
Well, you went out. From the point, that you started your sentence, you went out.
You went, I think, wow, wow. And then you come back and you're like, and that's what I think.
That's really what.
Oh, come on! You're doing that on purpose.
I thought is the thing. No, I was saying I. No, I'm not.
You just did it again. Hello.
For crying.
No, I'm not.
Oh, stop it!
Something's wrong.
Chris, I'm gonna hang up on you and reconnect you. Not just because. For two reasons. One, in case this really is a bad connection, and if not, just to punish you.
A little dialing music, please.
This is Webcomics Weekly, where the stick of it is, are you being jokey or are you being serious?
I'm just playing with you guys. That's all fun. Nah, I'm serious. There was a problem. Nah, I'm just kidding. Nah, it was a problem.
I was waiting for you to be like, so anyway, guys, I didn't think...
No, I'm sure that'll happen naturally. I'm not gonna do that.
Don't worry, Skype will make that bit for us.
I forgot what we were talking about.
We're discussing how I could do a strip where I'm blue.
You gotta do it. You should do it.
Really?
I think so. And I was gonna say this, and
then I'll be making my own F strip, but unlike yours, it'll have nothing to do with music.
No, you know what? If you hosted it on a separate site, do you really think that you'd get that much of a backlash from your readers?
No,
I mean,
but...
it's not like you're going from a strip like Sheldon, that is, of the four of us, the most family-friendly. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're going from Sheldon to the F-bomb comic. You're going from PvP that is definitely PG-13.
What if I did this? How about this? What if I did... Okay, guys. Oh, guys, I've got it. You just listen. I want you to know that you were here when light struck Marblehead. PvP uncensored.
Oh, I don't know.
Hey, you meaning you do the exact same strip, but you take it up a notch?
No, I just there is a rated.
Everybody's nude.
There's a rated. No. There.
That's it.
Jeez.
That is the only difference between the two.
Just that there is a, no. It's another strip, two times a week.
Okay.
It's just like PvP extra, but it is R-rated. There's cursing. There's F-bombs. There's.
But see, then you run into the problem of having, you know, then it's automatic that the same audience is going
to
come over.
Yeah, no, and this has to be a completely different strip.
I'm not crazy about it, but not only that, but it would make me feel awkward seeing Skull in dropping an F-bomb. It would be so not his personality. You've spent 10 years telling us who these characters are, and they're characters that, for the most part, don't use that kind of language and don't get in those kind of situations.
it's just 2 days a week is nothing but skull farting and then guys going, I effing farted, but I actually curse.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that wouldn't feel right.
No, I think I was just kind of kidding. I was being jokey,
nope,
Scott.
You're being serious.
No, I wasn't.
Here's what I was gonna say, which is interesting, I think. Everybody I know is not as their strips are not as funny as they are.
Yeah,
you know, like Dave is innately funnier than Sheldon, and I think I'm innately funnier than anything I'm doing, and you're funnier than PvP, and that's tough because sometimes people they're like, "Hey, you're so funny in the forum."
No, Brad, you are exactly as funny as your strip.
I'm sitting here waiting, you know, and waiting, and it's never going to happen.
Well, Brad, it goes without saying.
Brad, actually, your strip is... I'm not kidding. Brad, this is the real me, not the jokey me. Your strip is much funnier than you are.
God.
I should have shut up.
This is a guy who every time he tries to make a joke in person is always going, "Skymall, Skymall, jeez, come on, guys. I'm bringing gold on this one."
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
Well, now, I honestly do think that I'm funnier in the strip than I am in real life. I don't think I'm very funny in real life, but I think I'm pretty funny in the strip.
Well, that's why you got to cut loose, Brad.
Hey, you know what? That brings up... I think that kind of brings up an interesting topic. But, you know... Do you picture, I think there's a lot, I mean, we've met a lot of cartoonists, especially the last couple cons, and they all have this kind of innate ability to be performers. You know, mm-hmm. Like, think about Malky and you know, even Mike and Jerry. They are really funny guys. And
right.
I don't know that you saw that a lot necessarily in, you know, Gagaday syndicated strip artists, but there is something about people kind of steeped in pop culture our age that tend to all kind of, all these cartoonists tend to stem from the, you know, class clown cut up, but instead of going to stand-up comedy and becoming the next, like, you know, Robin Williams or something, they went into cartooning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I wonder how that like, I wonder if you went to a Rubens weekend and hung out with, like, you know, Mike Peters and Kathy Geiss-Weiss or whatever her name is, you know, whether they would just be killing you.
It's possible. I read an interview with Berkeley Breathed.
Yeah.
Who said that he and Watterson exchanged a lot of letters, and there was stuff Watterson drew in the margins that's like, oh, my God, I can't believe he would draw that. That is disgusting.
Oh, like he really was a funny cut-up kind of blue guy.
Yeah.
In real life.
But, like, that'll never be anywhere where we can see it.
No. And you know what? Let's not see it.
Yeah, I would. I think it's fine.
Like, when they eventually uncover the unpublished journals of Fred Rogers.
You shut your mouth.
He had a,
shut that mouth.
Love
he never ever.
Finally, I was just going. I hate to push the mailbag, but I cannot resist the segue here. Do you mind? Okay, you mind if I do one more?
No. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hey, so I've got a PG-13 comic. Think PvP level of crudeness.
Okay.
that I have been making for the last several years, and I'm planning on making a side comic as a coming-of-age story for one of my characters, But in order to tell the story, I want the comic should have a more mature focus and would include some partial nudity, which would be no more graphic than the rave scene from the second Matrix. This nudity would range from the crude, as in Revenge of the Nerds, early on to a more medical context later in the comic. What are your recommendations to present such a story in a way that maintains the integrity of the work and isn't seen as a hack appeal to hormonal 13-year-old boys? Signed, Anonymous.
Signed, Kathy Guys White. Whatever her name is.
Ack.
That's right.
As much nudity as is needed to express my disdain for buying new bathing
Did
suits.
Did you say ack? my bathing suit, chocolate cake.
How do you pronounce that nutty broad's name?
Guys White.
Guys White.
Okay. Take it easy.
God, Scott, Guys White.
I like how you guys took no exception to me calling her a nutty broad, but you took exception to me not grokking.
Well, she's a nutty broad.
But she's also a Guy's White.
Yeah.
Well, to answer your question, Anonymous, please listen to the last 20 minutes of this podcast. Didn't we just discuss this?
Bring it on for me. I don't see it.
Well, we just discussed how do you do a strip that is different from...
He's talking about now he's going to start using nudity, and how do you do that so it doesn't look like you're just trying to be blatantly...
Well, is it serious?
Why would you need nudity to not be blatantly sexual? What other reason is there for nudity in your comic?
Yeah, is it there for a serious reason, or is it just like, whoop, my... towel fell off, that's
just where he runs into problems, in my opinion. It says that it would range from the crude, as in Revenge of the Nerds, to a more medical context later on. So he's going to start being pandering, and then it's going to get artsy, and then it's going to get clinical, I guess. I may not be doing a very good job of paraphrasing what he's trying to get across there, but
guys, it's Revenge of the Nerds meets CSI
Stargate.
Yeah,
the English.
That's an amazing thing.
No, we need the artsy. Meets the unbearable lightness of being. And
I think the honest answer there is that if you're gonna go the nudity route, you know you're gonna cross a certain line. And there's some people that do it very, very well. And there's a way to do it tastefully so that it's not, hey, look, naughty parts.
What reason would you need nudity in a strip that applies to, like, well, this has to be in there?
Well, okay,
other than to titillate.
Take a look at Anders Loves Maria. All right. Now, there's been a little bit of frontal nudity there.
Those have been more than frontal nudity. There's full-on sex.
But it was kind of, those are seriously presented, I thought. It wasn't all just
it's an examination of adults in their early 20s, you know, being in their sexual prime.
I would say
it's a look at that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that, though, that the important thing is that the humor stems from a place other than just, hey, naked. You know what I mean? If Anders and Maria are naked in bed and you can see their privates or whatever, then the humor, if there is any, in that strip is going to come from the situation or something that they're discussing or whatever. It's not just, hey, boobs, you know.
But listen, I mean, in all fairness, even though there is integrity in Anders Loves Maria and there are reasons for the nudity in it, it still is a titillating strip. That is still a major part of its appeal.
I don't know.
I can't argue with you there, Scott.
Okay.
I can't. I think you've got a real good point. I think anytime you start using nudity, you know that when you do that once, then you're going to have a certain portion of your readership that is going to come back expecting to see it again.
First of all, I want to make very clear before anything gets mistaken out of context. I love Anders Loves Maria, and I think Renee Engstrom is one of the freshest new voices in webcomics in a long time.
Yeah.
But the truth is there's a lot of people that read that strip because it's like tee-hee sex.
Right, and they're going to come back on the next time and expect to see it, and then if and when they don't, you've got to deal with that as a cartoonist. Either that's something that you've got to bring forth on a regular basis, or answer to your readers, I got to figure.
Well.
Nah, potentially.
I think
so. Don't you
think? I mean,
it's like, hey, you gave it to us once. When's that coming around again?
Listen, I've experienced myself. PvP started off as a video game comic, and it's not that anymore. It's more relationship and it's more of a relationship and character-driven comedy. And I still, to this day, I miss PvP from 2001, when every strip was, hey, have you seen insert name of video game? Wah, wah. And there's nothing wrong with that opinion and that desire to see that again. It's just that I, as an artist, have moved on from it, so... But, yeah, I mean, I guess to answer his question, there's a way to do it, but I don't think you can escape being titillating. And there's a big difference between saying, I want to examine the repercussions of sexual promiscuity in young adults in their 20s, and saying, I'm doing a hard-hitting sci-fi, and there just happens to be a scene where everyone's naked.
Right.
For a joke, especially.
That's fair enough.
Like, that is not... That's
yeah,
not.
I just don't know how you can do... You know, be all or nothing, dude. You know, either do your Revenge of the Nerds comedy or do your medical drama where the corpses are naked, because that's how autopsies rooms are.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, just like we've seen time and time again, you can a well placed lamp and stuff like that. You can kind of get around that too, and
if it's not necessary.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen CSI a bunch of times. I've never seen a nipple in it.
Yeah, it's got to do something for the story. Otherwise, it is going to be salacious.
Here, I got a great idea. If you want to make comics that have nudity in it for no good reason, but do not titillate your audience, publish them in Europe.
Yeah.
Because they just don't come from a puritanical origin there.
This
right?
is actually an idea I've been playing with. at a lot of registrars, you can buy a co.uk domain. Will your strip be differently received if you buy a UK domain instead of a .com?
I don't know that they'll be differently received by Americans, but it will be differently be re- it'll you can get it differently received. You can do a strip for a European audience and it will be received differently.
You
but
think?
What?
Yeah. But I don't think American audiences that find your domain are going to be like, oh, I see what you're saying. Like, they're like, oh, this is cool. It's British humor. And,
right.
And
it's British, so it's better.
They don't have such hang-ups about it, so I don't have to assume that this artist has American sexual hang-ups.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. You know what, Chris? That would be really interesting.
That would be interesting.
Table that.
Think about it.
Maybe I should cut that out of the podcast so we can use so that in a clean environment.
So you register pvponline.co.uk and then just put use everywhere, and then you're good to go.
Yeah.
It's PLAYUR.
Playur.
Playur. Because that's what they do there.
And then I'm going to do, never mind.
Sprinkle in some mates.
Never mind. I wouldn't want to. I was going to do another joke, but I wouldn't want to offend.
Yeah, that's the sensibilities. Tough part. Leave that to the critics to call you out on.
No, full circle.
There you go. Right.
Webcomics Weekly, everyone. I've been Scott.
I've been Brad. Hey, before we go, we do have to. Somebody has posted this in our forum. Orphaned Works has reared its ugly head once again. If you want to get involved, the Graphic Artist Guild has put up a site at orphanworksnews.com. That's orphanworksnews.com. And they it looks like the August 11th post here, Guild...
No, now Brad's doing
Graphic
it.
Artist Guild president is... What?
You dropped out.
I dropped out?
You did for a second. Just for some.
Hang out loud.
The Graphics Guild Artist President said, go.
It's put out a call to all guild members and guild colleagues to register their disapproval for the Sean Bentley Orphan Works Act of 2008. Sounds like it's being hotlined, which means if I read correctly, it can be passed without any debate.
Uh-oh.
So you can register your disapproval through their portal. It looks like one of those deals that You go in there, tell them where you live, and it lines you right up with your senator or congressman. Don't waste your time with state congresspeople. They're not involved in this. But definitely, if it's something that you heard from our earlier Orphaned Works podcast, it's something that we feel that you might want to get involved in. Go to Orphan Works News and get involved.
If this goes through, we're all in hot water, kids.
I can't see where it's a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
We are all in hot water. There will be pictures of my characters being eye-sodomized all over the web. And there will be nothing I can do about
it. And they will appear on shoes.
Shoes, billboards, hockey team logos. Cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria. No?
Yes,
anyone? Nobody.
The team,
nobody?
The team
Ghostbusters, come on.
Thanks. I was gonna throw out a screw you guys, but you brought it home.
Well, I hate to end it on a sour note like that, but that was something.
Thanks,
I
Brad.
Wanted to end real quick. Yeah.
Bring it home with the Yogi Berra quote. Come on.
It's what I do. What can I tell you? Once somebody told Yogi Berra that he looked cool, he said, "Thanks, you don't look so hot yourself."
Oh.
No. I thought you were going to do something about copyright with Yogi Berra, but okay.
I got nothing. I got nothing. Yogi Berra never talked about copyright at all.
What a surprise. He seemed like he'd be on top of that.
But he did say, you know, with all these quotes, he did say that he didn't really say everything he said. Boy, you're setting me up for failure here. That's all I got. I'm going down the list here, babe.
I'm just trying to bail out on you like you bailed out on me earlier. Give me another Yogi Berra quote real quick.
You were being serious, Scott. Okay, if the fans don't come out to the ballpark, you can't stop them.
Wow.
What does that mean?
I just wanted to drop a wow on Brad the way he dropped a wow on me. Wow.
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 Wow. All right, guys.
Wow. Web Comics Weekly, it feels right.
God, I miss Dave.
Well, he doesn't miss us.
He's having a blast.
He is having the time of his life.
Clearly.
Do not worry about Dave.
Yeah, no. We'll be like, "Dave, you missed the podcast." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I guess I did. I was busy snorting cocaine off of Keanu Reeves' belly." And
podcast? What is... Oh, you're right.
I thought maybe I should ditch this clam bake here and head out to talk about webcomics. But then, no. I decided I would stick around with the really important, famous celebrities.
The cool people. God, you guys should have been there, but you don't live here. So.
And you're not awesome and famous and handsome.
And you're not cool like me.
Like me. Did you guys see that he changed his Twitter avatar to some hot chick?
Yeah. That was confusing everybody, I think.
I think he's just playing.
Oh, you don't think he's... I was kind of hoping that maybe the person we had not met was not, in fact, Dave Kellett.
But really a hot chick.
But really...
No, I think it's a joke.
Oh,
I think
okay. Dang.
I think it might be a little piece of humor.
Well, then now I'm just angry. Now I'm just disappointed. Listen, are we ending this podcast at all? Or is it going to go indefinitely?
Bring it.
Let's end it.
All right. Well, Webcomics Weekly. I mean, how many times are we going to end this thing?
Oh, wait. Hold on a minute. Scott, didn't you want to mention where they can find older episodes or what?
Oh, yeah. Until I get off my butt and upload the old episodes to our new home at Libsyn, you can find all of our old episodes over at TalkShoe. So that's TalkShoe.com, and then just do a search on Webcomics Weekly, and all of our old shows are there. But very, very soon, I will be uploading all of our old shows to our new location at www.libsyn.com. Which, man, that was a dumb URL to pick, because everyone thinks you've written it wrong. Everyone's like, "Oh, surely he meant www.libsyn.com." But
right.
No. The WW stands for Webcomics Weekly, which is that's the abbreviation.
But, you know, which is really their problem. I mean, it's, like, obviously correct.
You're doing a criticism thing, right?
Yeah, I'm criticizing the people who are complaining.
I really like the podcasts, but they really need to change the URL. From now on, I'm not going to say critic. I'm just going to go, oh, I read a recent review over at
from some That's good.
Man, the critic. All right, Ooh. Anyway, boo. That just undid any goodwill that we had generated by talking about it.
That's good. No,
I'll just cut that part of the podcast out. Not really. All right, so no, come on, guys. We still need to do 5 endings before I can turn this recording off, apparently. Is that it? Are we done now?
That's it. We're done.
Can we save something for next week?
I'm done. I don't have anything for next week either.
All right. Webcomics Weekly out.